Well, it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. We're going to focus on the question of justice. And I wonder, did Eric Garner get justice?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That's the voice of Paul Wilbur singing in Hebrew, which signals, yes, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, absolutely delighted and blessed to be with you today. Coming away live from the Washington, D.C. area, the great studios of WAVA FM, one of our great stations that we're on here in America. I was just in for some special meetings this morning in D.C., so took advantage of that to broadcast from here and then fly back tonight, God willing, broadcast from home base tomorrow, and then fly out for India Saturday morning and should be coming your way live from India Monday night, and then week after that, live from Malaysia for our first time ever. So welcome, welcome to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. It is Thursday. So it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but we're going to take some time to talk about justice, to talk about this as an important biblical concept, a great concept of the biblical prophets, and then I want to talk about what's just happened in New York City with Eric Garner, the death of Eric Garner at the hands of a policeman. Did he receive justice? Was justice done? With a grand jury verdict not to indict him. As I understand it, there were 23 grand jurors. You only needed a majority, 12, to indict him. Charles Krauthammer, a conservative leader, you'll often see him on Fox News, he said it's totally incomprehensible that there was no indictment. It's the least involuntary manslaughter. Perhaps you're in law enforcement, perhaps you're in the justice system, and you could explain to us the rationalization, explain to us why the grand jury did not indict the officer involved. Remember, there is a videotape that showed him putting Eric Garner in a chokehold, and then Eric Garner saying he couldn't breathe. Now, I understand that you could have some dangerous criminals saying they can't breathe and they're just trying to get out of a hold and inflict damage themselves. I understand that. I do understand, though, tragically, that Eric Garner died as a result of being choked, heart attack, whatever it was. And initially, the death was ruled a homicide. Well, was it justifiable? You get to weigh in. 866-34-TRUTH. If you feel there is no justice, you get to weigh in as well. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 18, speaking of our God, he executes justice for the fatherless and the widow, and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 19, you shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, and you shall not accept a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and subverts the cause of the righteous. And how about Deuteronomy 16, 20? Justice shall you pursue, or righteousness you shall pursue, so that you will live and possess the land the Lord your God is giving you. I just tweeted out a quote from Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel, and he said this: there may be times when we are powerless to prevent injustice, but there must never be a time when we fail to protest. Justice, it is a great theme of the Scriptures. The Psalms even tell us that God's throne is built on justice. Was justice done? Is this yet another example of a corrupt justice system? Or are we misinterpreting justice and not recognizing that when justice is done, we may not always accept it? Oh, we'll have a conversation about that. 866-34-TRUTH. We wouldn't normally focus on this topic on a Thursday, but it does relate to justice, which does relate to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And it's something that we need to talk about today, right here on the Line of Fire. 866-348-7884.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Phone lines already jammed. I want to get to as many calls as I can on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Have you read my latest article? It came out last night, entitled Some Inconvenient Truths About Ferguson. And I made four major points there. You can read it by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on latest article. The first point was, my namesake, Michael Brown, killed in Ferguson, is the wrong poster boy for the campaign against alleged police brutality. That was the, excuse me, the first point that I made. I've made that on the air as well. Second point, there is a reason that Black America is hurting. There is a reason that Black America is hurting. Point number three, overzealous police and a flawed legal system are not the greatest enemies of Black America. And number four, the NFL is politically correct to the point of being downright hypocritical. Read the article when you have an opportunity and weigh in the comments section there. 866-34-TRUTH. Before going to the phones, I just want to play a couple of audio clips for you. First, clip number three. This is Spike Lee on CNN speaking about the protests that were taking place in New York last night.
It was diverse New Yorkers, Black, white, brown, Asian, all chanting Black Lives Matter.
And a lot of young people.
Yes, diverse audience, Black Lives Matter, that's what they were chanting with nonviolent protests last night. And clip number one, this is Eric Garner's mother. This is what she had to say when the announcement was made that the grand jury would not be indicting the police officer responsible for putting Eric Garner in the chokehold.
I am truly disappointed in the grand jury's decision this evening. I don't know what video they were looking at. Evidently, it wasn't the same one that the rest of the world was looking at. How could we put our trust in the justice system when they fail us like this? They didn't only fail me, they failed many of us. And if we don't take care of this, they may fail you in the future.
That's right.
We got to make this right.
Some very valid questions are being raised. Some important questions are being raised. Are there double standards? Are police exonerated when they shouldn't be? Or are we being unfair, not recognizing the danger that police put themselves in every day of the week? And are others creating more trouble and doing more harm than good? This is Ed Mullins, clip number seven. Ed Mullins, who is the president of the Sergeants Benevolent Association, he had some things to say. This now goes back to August of this year.
Al Sharpton is not a credible individual. He never has been. But yet he's all over the media. He gets front page. He's allowed to sit in City Hall and threaten the mayor. We only need to look back at Tawana Brawley, Kevin Garrow in Brooklyn, ties to organized crime with narcotics. But Al Sharpton gets to determine the direction of justice in this city. It's wrong. It's completely wrong.
All right, so are there voices over these months that are doing more harm than good? How do we respond if we believe there's injustice? And can someone tell me from a perspective of a legal perspective or police perspective why it was right that the grand jury did not indict? I expected something. And even as Charles Krauthammer said, involuntary manslaughter. But that doesn't prove the person guilty. That just says that there will be a trial then to determine that, as opposed to there'll be no trial at all. Does the grand jury have the right to say, okay, not this charge, but another charge? I believe so, based on what Charles Krauthammer said. But again, we're going to discuss these things together. And let's just understand the larger concept that justice is foundational. Justice is foundational to the survival of the human race. Justice is something that we are all called to pursue as people of God. And on a certain level, although often not carried out around the world, justice, at least by perception, is a shared value that we all hold. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll start in Staten Island. Miriam, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Michael Brown. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Okay, I just wanted to discuss this whole issue with Mr. Brown. I grew up on Staten Island. We've had issues like that before on Staten Island. Pretty much we learn how to get along with everyone here, black, white, or whatever. But there is an undertow of prejudice that does go on. And I think it's really disappointing to the families, and it's a wake-up call for families of African-American families to say, you know what, we need to teach our children what to do, because, you know, we're in a sinful world, and this is a war. This is more than prejudice. This is demonic powers that are going on. And so, you know, even though there is a calm on Staten Island, we are distressed that something like this would go on in our neighborhood at the same time as what's going on in Ferguson. So, you know, a lot of the community groups are getting together and they're, you know, discussing the strategies, how to approach this together, because we've had issues like that in the past. And one of our organizations try to get the police together with the community and say, you know what, we have family members who are police officers, who are firefighters as well. And stuff like this does happen. So we try to bring them together to say, you know what, don't be afraid of the police. But because these are the times we live in, you know, we just really have to pray for God's mercy.
Yeah, and Miriam, it's right to have an approach that is calm in the midst of all the emotion and says, okay, what can we do to address real problems? 866-34-TRUTH. I just want to play one more clip and then go back to your calls. Joey, clip number four, this is also back in August. Patrick Lynch, Patrolman's Benevolence Association, he is responding to comments from Al Sharpton, who told the mayor if Dante wasn't your son, he would be a candidate for a chokehold. And this is what prompted some of the angry responses from Patrick Flynn, who is the head of the Patrolman's Benevolence, excuse me, Patrick Lynch, head of the Patrolman's Benevolence Association. Clip number four.
It is outrageously insulting to all police officers to say that we go out on our streets to choke people of color. As Al Sharpton stated while seated at the table right next to our mayor at City Hall.
Yes, now I absolutely agree with that. I have a question as to whether justice was done now in the Eric Garner death and in the grand jury's decision not to indict. I absolutely believe what Patrick Lynch said. I don't question that at all. And you would have all types of horrors happening literally day and night if you had police out to get whoever the minority is to them and choke them or kill them. Obviously, quite obviously. That does not mean that justice was done in this case. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Lee, all right, we won't go there. Let's go over to Dan in Washington, D.C., probably pretty close to where I am right now. What's on your mind, sir?
How are you, Dr. Brown?
Doing very well, thank you.
A little nervous. I'm going to try to keep my thoughts organized properly. If anybody in the United States does not want to admit that selective prosecution and double standards occur, their head is in the sand. Mm-hmm. There's no two ways about it. I don't know that it is so much a race issue, although I am a white man, so maybe I'm not an expert in that area. I think it's more of a have and have-nots. If Mr. Gardner had a powerful, wealthy family who had influence on many levels, I would say that things would be very different. When the Wall Street meltdown occurred with the financial debacle that almost ended the world's financial systems. If you remember, the Justice Department was being run by Lanny Brewer, and he said he couldn't find criminal intent on any level, and not one high-level executive was charged with any crime. So I say Lady Justice is not only blind, she's absent.
Mm. Yeah. First, Dan, thank you for gathering your thoughts in such an articulate way. Much appreciated. And yes, many others have raised this point as well, that race may not be the issue as much as class the issue, the haves versus the have-nots in society. What I want to ask on a larger level is, why are so many people of color among the have-nots? Why is our society like that today? How can we address this? This is our problem. We're Americans. This is our problem.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Attorney General Eric Holder has announced that Justice Department will be looking into this. My only question is, what other cases does the Justice Department look into? And in other words, as the Justice Department is looking into what happened in Ferguson, and now it's looking into this, is the Justice Department being even-handed in its work towards justice? 866-34-TRUTH. Tell you what, let's go over to San Bernardino, California. My friend, Dr. Al Garza, whose email address I spotted in my inbox the other day. Still need to write to you, sir, but welcome back to The Line of Fire.
How are you doing, Dr. Brown? How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Yeah, so your take on this.
Well, my take is I was a former defensive tactics instructor at a number of different colleges and universities for some of the law enforcement academies. My opinion is I can see where they probably did not indict Garner for the fact that they would have to prove based on the charges. Now, this is my opinion because I haven't seen the transcripts and they haven't been released, but if they were coming after him for what the for the homicide that was put out for the autopsy, then I would suspect that to prove homicide, they would have to prove intent, that he deliberately went in there with a chokehold to kill him, and that would be an issue, because if they could not prove intent, then they would have to not indict him and not to bring him up on charges. And with that, with how the indictment process works, the prosecuting attorney would have to bring up charges depending upon, you know, the evidence, and if they felt they can get a conviction for, or even bring to the grand jury to get him indicted for, you know, for murder, homicide, then that's what I think he was going for. Now, we teach our, I used to teach our students, because some states or some have limited chokeholds or no chokeholds, and since this officer violated the policy, of course, they went ahead and terminated him, took away his badge and gun because it was against policy. Now the charges, again, I would think that, again, they have to come after him and prove intent for homicide, and I think that's where they couldn't do it. Now, involuntary manslaughter, I think they could have probably come across and get him on.
Right. So, yeah, so that's the question. It sounds like you got a little baby in the background there. At least there's life all around, which is great. But, yeah, maybe someone could shed light on that. I was asked that question last night on social media. Was the grand jury able to indict on lesser charges, or was it simply, was it homicide or not? Because the medical examiner said there was homicide. I don't suspect for a second that in broad daylight the policeman would put a man in a chokehold in order to kill him, especially when his own life is not being threatened. I don't know that even the worst well, I'm sure there are some worst critics who think that that was intentionally the case. But when Charles Krauthammer said, why not indict an involuntary manslaughter, just my assumption would be, with his knowledge of the legal system, that that was an option. But we don't know that at this moment. Thank you for the call and for weighing in. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to David in Brewster, New York. Thank you for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Oh, how you doing? I'm actually, my name is David, of course. I'm a retired detective. in the Bronx, and I'm from the minority community. I'm Hispanic, actually Puerto Rican descent, grew up in Spanish Harlem. I think during the years of doing the work, I was satisfied with the outcome of the grand jury, because we are a republic, and they had to go by the letter of the law. We couldn't go by emotions or what we saw on video. You know, we didn't see the whole thing. And I know they followed certain procedures. And so I don't believe they had the intent to go in there to commit murder. But I do know it's a very hard job. And the person resisted arrest. And again, you know, he was able to talk. When he went down, from what I understand, some people say, I had trouble breathing. But he was able to talk. If he had trouble breathing, he wouldn't be able to talk. You know, but concerning the indictment, I'm pretty sure they went by the letter of the law. I don't think anybody in that jury had it in their mind, we're not going to indict these guys because he's a white guy, you know, or he's a white cop. That wasn't what happened. What happened was they looked at the law. It was explained to them the definition of the law and how it applied, and they voted, I believe, fairly. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, listen, we're asking folks to weigh in and give perspective. And obviously many will differ as well. The bigger question to me would be, did the jury look at this as a race issue, or did the jury say, well, it's a black guy, so, you know, black lives aren't as valuable? That would be the ultimate travesty. That would be the absolutely inexcusable situation. But one quick question for you. Just for the sake of our listeners who haven't been in your shoes, This is not to justify killing anyone that is not threatening someone's life, but what white might we not be aware of that a police officer has to deal with in a city like New York?
Well, in New York, this is the problem. With New York, it's very hard to do your job. You're already perceived, depending on which community you're working in, as a bad guy, or even if you're a Hispanic and you're a cop, a race traitor, depending on how radical the person or neighborhood you're working in. But trust me, no police officer goes to work with the idea that I'm going to beat somebody who doesn't look like me or share my last name or culture. We don't go there thinking I'm going to do this. You know, I work with, over the 20 years, different nationalities, and, you know, something, you know, we have rules, and we are really supervised. I mean, we have agencies up the wazoo watching us, you know, and by the way, I am a Christian and a devout Christian, and I would have never tolerated working with anybody who was a racist. And let me tell you something, you know, people, if they didn't like me, they didn't like me because of who I was. Either they didn't like me because of my race. You know, and mind you, I'm from that community. I grew up during the 1970s when they were rioting, and FALN and Spanish Harlem. So I'm from that radical element. But when you work and you serve the community, and let me tell you something, you know, the amount of sacrifice that these police officers, they sacrifice their bodies, their lives, their families. You know, they don't go in there with the idea of, they're not taking this job to become rich.
I understand.
You know, they're not taking this job for the glory. You know, they want to take care of their families. They want to get home safe, and they want to serve the community. You know, I know the guy wasn't going in to murder somebody. No way was that cop looking to do that.
Got it. Hey, I've got to jump in. I appreciate the comments. 866-34-TRUTH, and thank you for your service to the community, to the city. Friends, I know the corporate outrage is there. I know no matter how many good cops there are out there, and no matter how hard people work, people watch the video, and I was shocked as well with the verdict. You get to keep weighing in. We're going to continue this conversation. And go to my website right now, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Check out the special resource offer. Trust me on this. Get as many as you want. Get them for the holidays.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Now that the local investigation has concluded, I'm here to announce that the Justice Department will proceed with a federal civil rights investigation into Mr. Garner's death.
Now, I want to present something to you to think about, to analyze your own heart right now, okay? If you hear that statement by Attorney General Eric Holder that we just played, saying that there will now be a national, federal investigation of the death of Eric Garner, and it'll be looked at as a civil rights issue, do you hear that and say, where's he coming from? What gives him the right to do that? He's just doing that because he's black and the victim was black and he's biased and he's part of the Obama administration. So hang on. You're going to get upset about that and not understand how people are upset over the death of Eric Garner that was videotaped, where it seems to the observer that unnecessary or excessive force was used that, unintentionally led to his death, but led to his death nonetheless. You're going to get upset over one thing and not see how people are upset over the other. 866-34-TRUTH. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but we are preempting our total Jewish focus by focusing on this very important issue of justice and the question of what has happened with the death of Eric Garner. I want to say this, and I want to go right back to the phones, which have been jammed from the moment that we gave the topic out today. Many of you know that I've been working on a commentary in the Book of Job the last few years, getting it finished by around September of 2015. That's the deadline for the publisher, and then out sometimes I think late 2016. But one of the great questions in the book is, where is justice? That Job is saying, I do not deserve to be treated like this, and challenging God, and ultimately saying, I want to have an audience with God, and actually, I want to have it out. I want to present my case because he's mistreating me. If I could just find some kind of arbiter, some type of mediator, so I could present my case, because there must be justice in God's universe. And even though on the one hand he's challenging God, on the other hand he's affirming that in God's universe there must be justice. And yes, President Bush did call for a federal investigation with the beating of Rodney King. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll go to Manhattan. Jose, welcome to the line of fire.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, I think that we need to understand how the grand jury came to its determination in order, I believe, to diffuse some of what is going on, because, you know, if they came in with a, if they decided that they were going to accuse him on the basis of homicide, you know, I agree with the officer. I don't think that cop went out there to murder that individual.
Right.
I do, however, believe that in the course of anger, he might have said to himself, no matter what, you're going down. And then in that case, I would consider at the very best, you know, manslaughter, not involuntary manslaughter, but manslaughter, because I think that there could be probable cause to show that he, in a state of anger, decided to use, you know, by any means necessary, that chokehold. The other thing that I wanted to say was that there is, without question, a longstanding, simmering dislike between the police and minority communities. I don't know what the answer is. I'm a minority myself. I live in an area that's considered, you know, much a high crime area. And, you know, I do feel for the police, because the other question that I have, and this is not, you know, saying that what happened was justified by any means, but what I'm saying is that the question I have for myself was, how does someone like Eric Garner end up in that position to begin with? Because ultimately, once he goes, you know, if he's convicted,
yeah,
he goes to prison.
I just gotta jump in. Yeah, there was, in this case, a minor violation of the law. Without that, there wouldn't have been the confrontation, but the outrage remains. And I want to share some interaction I had with a black brother on social media last night.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming away from our great WAVA studios right outside of Washington, D.C. Before I go back to your calls, two quick comments I want to make. One, I was interacting with a black brother last night on social media. He had read my article on Inconvenient Truths from Ferguson. Again, to read that, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article there. And anyway, he read the article, felt it was fair and balanced, appreciated it, and was just speaking some very kind words to me. But what we agreed on beyond that was that there's no right for the white community in America, especially in the church, to be indifferent to the pain that's being experienced in black America right now, and to be indifferent to the point of view and the background that fuels the fire. No, again, any unlawful behavior is wrong. The arson, the looting, of course that's wrong and that's deplorable. And yes, there have been many voices stirring up anger and hatred, and it's non-constructive. There is a godly anger that will produce godly fruit, but that's not what's being stirred up in many cases. And I've lamented the fact that in many cases, the most important voices in the black community and in the black church are not being heard nationally, which is a shame. That being said, we must recognize that these issues and the larger issues of the challenges faced in black America today in the home and the family, I don't mean every home, every family, but in many, many cases, are our problem because we're Americans. This is our problem together. And as followers of Jesus in particular, this is our problem. The second point is this. Why is it that you don't have more blacks on the police force, more Hispanics on the police force? You just heard from Hispanic officer, retired officer, in the last two segments back, and he said that he'd be looked at by some in his community as a traitor. Ferguson police said they're going to do their best to recruit more black men on the force, black men and women on the force. Their problem has been that they have not been able to get black men and women to be desirous of being cops because of the hostility towards the police and the community. So this is now a double-edged sword, very difficult to deal with and move forward unless cool heads can sit down together and say, ultimately, we're on the same team. If we want to protect people from lawlessness, if we want to protect people from robbery, from theft, from murder, from rape, then everybody has to work together, and we're all on the same team. That, again, easier said than done. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll go to Elmont, Long Island. Steve, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Yes, how you doing, Dr. Brown? God bless you and your family during this Merry Christmas season.
Thank you.
First of all, I just want to state that I grew up in the hood in the projects in Queens. I'm a white guy. So I pretty much have a really good idea. I was there for about more than 16 years living there. I have a really good idea of who the fakers and who the people are who want to make a difference. And it really discourages me when I see people, you know, trying to destroy how far we've come as a country. This is a great country. And I see people tearing it down. I'm sick of that. Because I know that, you know, I've tried my best to love black people because I was beaten up after school waiting when I was a little kid. But nobody wants to hear my pain because I'm a white guy. You know, I'm sick of this crap. Each and every person has their own pain in life. We have to stop playing the violin. We have to get straight up, look in the mirror and say, I heard a black guy saying, we bring it upon ourselves. I said, you know, brother, you're absolutely right. I brought it upon myself. I hear these things all the time. I talked to a police officer this morning, and they actually believe that the federal government is trying to take over and do all these things, and they're not really helping out. I never hear Obama bringing us together. When does he try to bring us together? I never hear any words like that. He divides us. And Eric Holder is a divider, too. I'm sorry. You know, we can hear better speeches from these people. We don't hear love. And I know they are the secular world. I've heard scripture come out of Obama's mouth. He twists it up like a little pretzel from New York. He's phony. And that's a fact. And people need to get real. I would vote for Martin Luther King
for president, all right? Not Obama. I'm sick of these people. They are race baiters. They are dividers. They divide and conquer. And the only way we're going to have peace in this world is when Jesus Christ comes back and sits on the throne where he properly belongs.
All right, Steve, I appreciate you weighing in passionately. By the way, thank you for the call. I personally do believe that there has been a lot that's been done by President Obama and by Attorney General Holder that has been divisive. I was concerned about this for years. I feel it has been divisive. Nonetheless, there are issues that must be addressed, and the president has to be able to speak about addressing them. The timing of what's said and when and how and other actions, those things are all highly debatable. But are there issues that we must address and we cannot ignore and we must address together? Yes, there are. Yes, there are. And I'll say this, one more point, and then we'll go back to the phones. As we have been talking about Ferguson, and as I have been saying that there are other cases that can better draw attention to overzealous police or police brutality or injustice in the legal system, people have said, well, what about Eric Garner in New York? I think because there was a videotape, there was just a massive expectation of some type of indictment. Again, I wasn't there to hear what the grand jury heard or to hear if they had other options and charges, but I fully understand the sense of outrage and the sense of there is no justice. I fully understand that. And that's why we're addressing it on Thirdly Jewish Thursday as we talk about how justice is the very foundation of God's throne. We go to Brooklyn. Yolandi, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Mr. Brown. So happy to talk to you. So much going on. I have three topics that I want to touch. Number one, America is bleeding. And it's not just a black issue or white. We're bleeding because of our not being in relationship with our God. We need to hold repentance days where we repent before God for the things that we have done against this country. God bless America. I love this country. But we also have to deal with our soul issue, not the country alone, our relationship with God, where we have come against him. That's the other thing. And this situation with police officers, it's an anointed position to be an officer. God has put them here to keep law. Without them, it's havoc. But we cannot live against them. We have to work with them. I'm not a police officer, but I'm the daughter of a police officer. And I understand the things that the police officers go through. However, righteousness is what we want. When you are walking in righteousness, there's no need for officers, because your relationship with God is what's going to count. If I know I cannot do this because God says not to do it, then the police officers have no need to touch me. You understand? So my thing, my whole view of this entire situation is it's repeating consistently from state to state. We need to get us black, white, brown, Chinese, everyone, because we are a country that's moving to one. This is a blessed country. Administration have to see where they're faltering, not divide us, bring us together as one unit, as a family, and that we would get in the presence of God and repent. And then we bring it down into our own family unit.
Yep.
So that we will not be divided on so many issues.
Yeah, and Yolandi, here's the deal. To think of America as a whole repenting, turning to God, becoming one, boy, that's massive. But can't we as God's people humble ourselves? Can't we as God's people come to him in true repentance? Can't we as God's people ask forgiveness of one another? Can't we as God's people take steps to lead the way? I know this has been done before on some level, but yeah, the time is ripe. Thank you for weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Rob in Manhattan. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, I was like to tell you, I'm from the town of Montgomery City, Missouri. I don't know if you know that town.
No, I'm not familiar.
Anyway, we have a lot of corruption going on around there and stuff. The police ended up beat one of their own up. He wrote an article in our town newspaper. you know, we have a lot of different other things going on. But I would like to say that it's not only the dark skinned people. You know that there's a lot of white people. You know, out here, they, you know, that's end up just in the same situation. You know what I'm saying? I believe
about three times as many whites are killed by police each year as blacks. The percentage of blacks That's would be right. higher, but I believe it's about three times as many whites are killed by police in the midst of confrontations. And of course, tragically, many police lose their lives. But Rob, thank you for the reminder. I appreciate it. Got to run, got a break, but thank you, sir, for calling in.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Just sent a note a moment ago. A great cause calls for great leadership. The point being, would you be praying that national voices would be raised up? Voices of justice, voices of wisdom, voices of reason, that national voices will be raised up who can speak constructively to the nation, who can lead the way for those that don't have voices, and that can help bring us together to address the larger problems afflicting our nation. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to John in Manassas, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Listen, I just want to say every action has a reaction, and I'm getting fed up with what I'm seeing, how everyone, the black community, or anyone that wants to make it look like it's the white man's fault. Now, since every action has a reaction, we got to see these black people, what they're doing is crazy. I mean, it doesn't give them the right to behave like animals, you know, and expect.
Well, so hang on. So John, yeah, just a question. The peaceful protests in New York last night and signs saying Black Lives Matter. Are you saying that those people were acting like animals?
No, I'm talking about Missouri. Now, for example, if anyone, if you, me, we'd be misbehaving. And we're doing something, and then here comes the police trying to bring peace and order. And I'm being totally not only disobedient but disrespectful to them, and not wanting to cooperate. What do you think is going to happen? They're going to try to use a little more force on me. And if I want to run, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to try to run and catch me. A little more force. If I'm anything, and what these people are doing, it's not just black people; it's everyone. But if you notice, the majority of black people are always, they make everything bigger than what it is, and they want to act like they're tougher than anyone else. And it's time that not just black people, but everyone, anyone who does anything wrong should, you know,
let me just ask you. So you don't think that whites react in certain ways, or that Hispanics react in certain ways? You don't think there's any basis for blacks being upset and saying we don't get justice, we get mistreated by the police? You don't think there's anything to that?
Okay, what I'm trying to say here is, what's the mistreated? Somebody that's not cooperating, and then the police has to use a little force? I mean, if this guy would have been cooperating, it doesn't matter if you were black, white, or Spanish.
Right. I agree.
You want to act tough? I don't have to give you my ID. I don't have to show up. What do you think is going to happen?
Number one, I concur 100% that we need to be respectful to police. Even if they don't treat us in the best way, that's the authority. We're respectful. That's number one. Number two, we should, without qualification, condemn the arson, the looting, 100%. Doesn't matter the color of anybody's skin. It is wrong. It is destructive. It is ugly. It has nothing to do with justice. Number three, here's where I differ with you, John. There are issues. I've had too many black callers tell me, pastors, upright people, corporate executives and others say that they've been racially profiled and they've been mistreated because somebody by the same color of skin was being looked for and therefore they were a potential suspect. And if you just look at court sentencing, I do believe that you'll find that the lower income and often people of color will get harsher prison sentences than those who can hire the best attorneys and so on, and often are white. So to me, we have to address it. To not address it is to miss an issue. And, you know, do you shoot someone until they're dead? Is that using a little force? So I agree with some of what you're saying, but others, I'd ask you to really take this to the Lord and pray and ask if you have a blind spot here, all right? 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going right back to the phones, but you know the ultimate tool that God's given us to get to the root of what's just our emotions, what's our human passion versus truth, it's the Word of God. It's the written Word of God. It's the Scriptures. God's Word. God's Word is a tree of life. God's Word is a lamp to our feet. God's Word separates between soul and spirit, between joints and marrow. It's a discerner in the thoughts and intents of the heart. I want to commend to you a brand new translation, the Tree of Life version of the Bible. Nothing like this has been done before. It's a team of Messianic Jewish and Christian scholars who've worked together. I'm involved in this project as well. And we have the hardcover Bible, the complete Bible. We can get them to you if you want to give it as a great Christmas gift. They're normally $30 plus postage, but we have some in stock now. And this week, you can get them for $20 and we'll pay the postage. But take advantage of this. The sooner you order, the sooner we can get these to you and be sure you have them for the holidays or just for yourself long term, the Tree of Life version of the Bible. Call 1-800-278-9978 to order. You can order as many copies as you want, by the way. 1-800-278-9978. Or you can go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And when you go there, you'll see it. There's a video you can watch as well. All right, let's go to Ann in Dumfries, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so glad I got through. I've been itching and burning to get through for the past couple of days. And I know that we're winding down time, so I'm going to rattle off on my ideas as quickly as I possibly can.
Thank you.
There is an author by the name of Toni Morrison. She did some research on a book she was writing. She went back to early American history and found where there was a point in time in history where it became lawful for anyone to hit a black person, and it was illegal for the black person to retaliate. I don't think the dominant culture in America has ever gotten over that. I think in some instances that mindset is still alive and unfortunately thriving and well in this country today. Every incident that gets attention where a black person has been mistreated by law enforcement is not necessarily one that deserves that attention. There are times when the black person has been wrong, but very often, all too often, there are times when the black person has not been as wrong as the police would make it seem. And there's a sense of injustice. So what happens is you have the injustice that is perpetuated time after time after time. And when people go to the judicial system looking for the justice, they don't get the justice. And then you have things that you have like in Missouri. That's what happened. It wasn't that he was Mr. Brown was the best poster person for this cause. It's just that it had been so much injustice. I'll give you another example. In fact, I'll give you a challenge. I want you over the next 2 weeks to watch television. I want you to look at the roles that are given to black males. They're either the villain, the criminal, the snitch, the weak person. So it's just perpetuated and permeated all throughout American culture. And I think it's this the cacophony of just wrongdoings. I'm not saying in some instances people don't deserve some of the things that they've done, but in a lot of instances there's misjustice. I am a retired law enforcement officer.
And tell you what, Ann, I apologize. I just wanted to get you, give you every moment until we're out of time. But thank you, and thank you for using the word cacophony on the air. I appreciate you weighing in very much. Friends, this conversation will continue in days to come. My bottom line today, if we have the heart of God, we must have a heart that pursues justice. The world is built on justice. Is it true that over the centuries, Christian artists have actually been anti-Semitic and taken the Jewishness out of Jesus?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Coming your way today from right outside of Washington, D.C., our WAVA FM studios here. And God willing, get home tonight, and then tomorrow broadcast from our home studio. And then Saturday morning, fly out to India for a week of ministry in India, and then a week of ministry in Malaysia for a Singaporean church that'll be meeting in Malaysia. It'll be my first time in Malaysia. So we should be coming your way next week, live from India and live from Malaysia. What do you think of that? Yeah, so we'll have some special broadcast. Really looking forward to that. 866-34-TRUTH. Has the Jewishness of Jesus been taken out through history, through art, in literature? Do you know there was a pope who was accused centuries ago of being part Jewish, and there was actually a split in the Catholic Church over having a pope with Jewish blood? And one of the most bizarre and ironic statements that was made, was it Bernard of Clairvaux? I'm going to have to check to see. But I think it was, yeah, he made the statement, "To the shame of Christ, a Jew now occupies the seat of St. Peter." Yeah, I'm sorry to laugh, but can I repeat that? To the shame of Christ himself, a Jew, may I add, born a Jew, born of a Jewish mother, born under the law, lived and died as a Jew, born and died as king of the Jews. Bernard said, "To the shame of Christ, a Jew now occupies the seat of St. Peter." Peter, also a Jew. His Hebrew name would have been Shimon, as we know him as Simon Peter. Shimon bar Yonah, Simon bar Jonah, Simon son of Jonah. Yeah, and Kepha would have been the Hebrew Aramaic equivalent of his Greek name, Peter. And when Jesus called him Peter, he didn't call him Peter because that would have been Greek. He would have called him Kepha. That's your name because your testimony forms the rock on which the Messianic community will be built. When we come back, we are going to be speaking with a fascinating guest. He has been on the air with me before, and Dr. Bernard Starr, he is a retired professor, and he became fascinated. He attended a debate that I did with my friend Rabbi Shmuley Boteach years ago in New York City. He attended the debate. It got him very interested in the question of the Jewishness of Jesus, and was there a Jesus phobia in the Jewish community? And had the church taken away the Jewishness of Jesus, began to point to artwork that supported this. A medieval artwork where you would have Jews painted as Jews, but that's the bad guys, that's the Pharisees, the bad guys. They look like Jews, but in very ugly, ugly form. And then Jesus just looked like this beatific white European. What happened? Well, he's written a book now that's called Jesus, Jews, and Antisemitism in Art, How Renaissance Art Erased Jesus's Jewish Identity, and how today's artists are restoring it. So, Dr. Starr, Bernard Starr, will be with us when we come back. It's going to be a fascinating interview. If you've got some questions, 866-34-TRUTH.
Fire we please, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That music tells you it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. God willing, 1 week from today, it'll be 1:30 in the morning as I'm speaking to you at this time, 1:37 in the morning. 1 week from today, coming away live from India, we'll be doing Thoroughly Jewish Thursday from India, all going well. My 22nd trip to India in the last 22 years. I'm delighted to have on the air again a fascinating guest, Dr. Bernard Starr. He is Professor Emeritus at the City University of New York. He is a psychologist, journalist, and author. And his first book that got a lot of attention, Jesus Uncensored, or The Uncensored Jew. And this was going to tell us about the authentic Jewish Jesus. He's written a book now, which is... excuse me, bound to stir up even more discussion. And just looking at this online, I have a copy of this electronic version. It's available for just $2.99 on Amazon. Jesus, Jews, and Anti-Semitism in Art, How Renaissance Art Erased Jesus' Jewish Identity and How Today's Artists Are Restoring It. And what's really neat about getting the electronic edition, aside from the fact it's only $2.99, so get online and order your copy now. I don't get a dime from this. I'm just encouraging you to do it. It's a full book, but at almost giveaway price. But when you get online, you can click on all the links. When you get the ebook, you can click on all the links. And when you click on the links, that'll take you straight over to the artwork and different things like that. So great opportunity to do it. Bernard, welcome back to The Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. It's great to be back on the show.
Yes. So your new book, this obviously builds on some of the most striking imagery that you discovered in your first book. For our listeners that don't know about this, tell them the journey that you went on through art and what you discovered.
Well, in looking at some Renaissance art representations of Jesus, particularly one of the first ones that really struck me was by Fra Angelico. It's a 15th century painting called The Mary Magdalene Encountering the Risen Jesus. And both of them are flaming blondes, and the light on them even emphasizes that more. And I thought, wow, this is kind of odd. You know, these are Jewish Semites of the first century. So that called my attention to other artworks, which I had seen before, but I never paid much attention to. And I did a walking tour of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Renaissance section, and there I was greeted by painting after painting that showed a Christianized Jesus, often in a Renaissance setting, regal setting, fair skin, blonde. No, you know, that wasn't the most critical point of it that I possibly objected to. But what really struck me was that there was no indication, no connection between Jesus and Judaism. He was strictly Christian. And as I started studying a massive collection of medieval and Renaissance art, I saw that that was the dominant. It's rare, almost impossible to find a Renaissance painting of Jesus that suggests anything having to do with Judaism.
Well, what about the charge that the medieval artists were just painting pictures that resembled the world they lived in? So naturally, if they're going to paint a picture of Jesus or biblical figures, they're going to look like Renaissance Europeans, and therefore they didn't know how to paint differently, or they were thinking in certain terms, so that's how they painted everything.
Well, that's the argument that that art historians flip out. They say, oh, this was just the Renaissance style of contemporizing figures in appearance, dress, and setting. But the fact is that doesn't hold up when you look at other artworks where they specifically depict Jews. and some of those paintings are in the book. For example, Albrecht Dürer's 16th century painting of Christ among the doctors. The Jews are dark, menacing. One of them looks almost subhuman. And there's a whole slew of other ones. And supporting that, too, and I just cited that in an article that I published just 2 days ago, and that is a citation of a book by that just came out by Sarah Lipton, a scholar, called Dark Mirror, The Medieval Origins of Anti-Jewish Iconography. And she has, you know, loads of pictures there, photos of artworks from the medieval and early Renaissance period. Showing the demonization of Jews. So it's not true that they pervasively Christianized everybody and presented them as medieval Renaissance Northern Europeans. When they pictured the Jews, it was an entirely different matter.
All right, so it's not just that they knew how to, say, make the rabbis or the Pharisees or the perceived bad guys in the drama with Jesus or some other historical event.
Mm-hmm.
They knew how to make them look Jewish. But they didn't
exactly.
make Jesus look Jewish, but they actually demonized them? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. I mean, in Sarah Lipton's new book, she talks extensively about how some of these stereotypes started entering Jewish iconography in the 11th century, where they introduced the big nose, and Jews were pictured wearing pointed hats, yellow hats often, and as we know, throughout the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, Jews were ghettoized and forced to wear yellow badges often. And interestingly, I discovered that the color yellow was suggested for the hat and for the badge on the arm because it was the color of urine. So that argument that they make simply doesn't hold up. Yes, there are cultures in Africa and elsewhere where Jesus is pictured dark, sometimes even black. But even there, he's totally Christian. You don't see any hint of any Jewish connection. And I feel that that's one of the important and very overlooked underpinnings of historic anti-Semitism, because it set up a dichotomy between Jesus, the fair-skinned Christian, and Jews who are different, the others, and who rejected Jesus. So it set up an opposition between the two. And I think that that was a powerful underpinning of anti-Semitism that continues today.
Yeah, and we can talk about how it continues today in a moment. But I remember preaching in India one time. There was a near riot. It was a very tense situation in terms of what was going to happen next. But someone yelled out in the midst of it, you know, this is a white man's religion. So the perception that here I am an outsider, I'm over there in India. Of course, I was there with an entirely Indian team. But I was doing the preaching that this was an outsider's religion and faith, and that was the perception. That's what it's been through history. That's what they were trying to say. And obviously, that's very alienating when you feel this is an outsider's religion. But you're saying that's what's happened with the Jewish people through history. The perception of Jesus Yeshua is that he's an outsider, part of a foreign religion. Bernard, how powerful was the influence of art in the ancient world? We live in a very different culture today, but how powerful was that influence?
Well, I think it was very powerful, firstly, because wherever Renaissance people walked, visited, what they saw was a totally Christianized Jesus. And then added to that, when they made the charge that the Jews were Christ killers, you know, that was really a setup for persecution. But wherever they went, I mean, how did this artwork come about? And I'm not pointing to the artists as having done this, because art was a business and a very difficult competitive business in Renaissance Italy. And artists had to give the patrons, which were wealthy people, and the church was a big consumer of art, had to give them what they wanted, and what they wanted was a Christianized Jesus. And if you put anything in there that hinted of Judaism, you would very well have been sent off to the Inquisition. I mean, that was a big no-no, since the Jews were demonized and they were considered the Antichrist and the Christ killers. And the general public knew nothing else, because, as you know, I have a chapter in the book about how Christians were denied access to their Bible for 1,000 years. The church discouraged people from reading the Bible. And I think expressly, too, because the Bible, that is the Gospels, portray a thoroughly Jewish Jesus. I mean, if you wanted to demonize Jesus, would you want them to read in Luke 2:41, "Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover," or in Luke 4:16, "And he," Jesus, "came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for the read."
Yeah, he didn't go to church on Sunday. He went to synagogue on Sabbath. We'll be right back with Dr. Bernard Starr. Two R's in Starr. Get the book. Download it right now. Jesus, Jews, and Anti-Semitism in Art. You can get it at Amazon.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, welcome back to the Line of Fire. My special guest, Dr. Bernard Starr, psychologist, journalist, professor emeritus at the City University of New York, Brooklyn College. His first book on the subject of the Jewishness of Jesus, Jesus Uncensored, Restoring the Authentic Jew. He is the organizer of the art exhibit, Putting Judaism Back in the Picture Toward Healing the Christian-Jewish Divide. And his newest book, it's over 250 pages, but you can download it as an ebook, and it has all live links. So if you just click on the links, and it'll take you to the actual artwork and different things like that. It's just $2.99 to download on Amazon, Jesus, Jews, and Anti-Semitism in Art, How Renaissance Art Erased Jesus' Jewish Identity, and How Today's Artists Are Restoring It. And that is Star with two R's. Bernard, tell us how this is still happening today in the negative. And then tell us about how people are actually addressing this and fixing it in the world of art.
Well, I don't know that they're doing it. The ones that I've organized are doing it. And it's interesting how it came about. In response to one of my articles, I was suggesting that it would be interesting to repaint some of these Renaissance paintings to put Judaism back in the picture. If, for example, take Michael Patch's 15th century painting, wonderful, beautiful painting, The Marriage of the Virgin. And typical of the Renaissance paintings, there you have an image of Mary and Joseph, and they're being betrothed, married, and it's in a Renaissance regal setting. And who is officiating? It's a pontifical person surrounded by other saints and Christian imagery and crucifixes and whatnot. And that's a total falsification of history. This is a young Jewish girl being married to a Jewish carpenter, and here it's presented as a totally Christian event, okay? But at any rate, so I was discussing that and saying, it would be interesting if somebody redid that and brought Judaism into the picture. So I got an email then from an artist and architect in Canada who said that his relatives in Renaissance Italy commissioned some of those paintings, and he'd like to take a shot at repainting them. And his name is Rod Borghese, and he's related or a descendant, distant descendant of the Borghese banking family, very wealthy family that indeed did commission that. In fact, the Borghese Gallery in Rome today is one of the great world collections of artworks. So he repainted that, and in his repainting of it, the person officiating is a rabbi, and it's a more Jewish setting. And when you put those two paintings side by side, it's unarguable. I mean, his may not be as magnificent artistically as Michael Patcher's painting, although Rod is a very talented artist, but there's no question that it's more authentic. You can't argue it. The one that's totally Christianized is a total fabrication and a distortion of biblical history.
All right. What about the fact that in the Jewish community, for whatever reason and for whatever historical reasons unfolding, there is something that you refer to as Jesus phobia, and you encourage fellow Jews to get over this. What is Jesus phobia, and why is it important for Jews to overcome this?
Well, I think it's important for them to overcome it because if we're going to really have a genuine reconciliation between Christianity and Judaism, I mean, that's got to be a two-way street. As a matter of fact, in speaking before Christian groups, I never have problems with them. I mean, I think that Christians are recognizing the Jewish roots of Christianity and are interested in it and welcome it, actually. But Jews still cringe at the name Jesus, even. And in fact, I have a citation of it in the book when I said that at one time when I was addressing a Jewish group of about 30 Jewish adults, and I opened with "I love Jesus," and then I hesitated, and they knew that I'm Jewish and know that I'm not a Messianic Jew. I know you'd like me to be one, but they knew that, so they were kind of shocked. And I paused for 20 seconds, and there was like dead silence there. And afterwards, I said, "Well, how many of you cringed when I said that I love Jesus?" And they all raised their hands. And I said, "Well, why? What have you got against Jesus?" And they said, "Oh, he said he was the Messiah, and he wasn't." I said, "Well, you know, there's been more than 50 Jewish messiahs, and some of them are still revered. Nobody believes they are messiahs, but they're not rejected. And some of them did great harm to Jews and Judaism." I said, "What else?" He said, "Oh, millions of people were killed in the name of Jesus." And I said, "Well, really?" I said, "Well, can you name anything or cite anything that Jesus ever said or did that was harmful to Jews or to anyone?" And, of course, they couldn't. So there's a lot of, and what does this stem from? By the way, I asked them, I said, "How many of you have read the New Testament?" Not a single hand went up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So their notions are strictly based on hearsay and stereotypes. But interestingly, as I pointed out, and I learned this from Bart Ehrman, who is a biblical scholar, teaches New Testament course at the University of North Carolina and is a noted biblical scholar. And
yeah, also noted agnostic that I've debated on the problem of suffering. But
he started his career as a devoted Christian.
I know.
In divinity school, et cetera, and then had some changes that occurred in his understanding. But he's still quite a scholar. But at any rate, yep. In his introductory New Testament class, with something like 300 students, he said, "How many of you believe that the Bible, the New Testament, is the inspired word of God?" And he said, everybody raised their hand. And then he said, "How many of you have read in its entirety the New Testament?" Not a single hand went up.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So then he said, "How many of you read the Da Vinci Code?" And everybody's hand went up.
Yeah, and that's the level of where things are at. Hey, please stay right there. I appreciate you being willing to give us a few more minutes. My guest, Dr. Bernard Starr, that's two R's. Go to Amazon.com, download this. You won't be disappointed. It's just a $2.99 download, Jesus, Jews, and Anti-Semitism in Art. And friends, take advantage of our special resource offer, a Bible that as you read, this is a thoroughly Jewish Thursday Christmas gift too, but as you read this translation, the Tree of Life version of the Bible, the Jewishness of the background will come to life. The reality of the Jewishness of Jesus and the apostles will come to life. And that will put the rest of the gospel, taking this message now to the rest of the world, in a new and exciting context. And overall, it's just a dynamic new translation. We've reduced the price. We're paying the postage. And we'll get it to you plenty of time for Christmas if you order now. 1-800-278-9978. Be free to order as many copies as you like. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Watch the video right there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Dr. Bernard Starr. He is professor emeritus at City University of New York, Brooklyn College, author of Jesus Uncensored, Restoring the Authentic Jew, and organizer of the art exhibit, Putting Judaism Back in the Picture Toward Healing the Christian-Jewish Divide. His newest book that I really encourage you to download on Amazon right now, it's out as an ebook and it's almost being given away. It's a 256-page book with tons of detail and fascinating information, just $2.99 to download. Jesus, Jews, and Anti-Semitism in Art, How Renaissance Art Erased Jesus' Jewish Identity, and How Today's Artists Are Restoring It. Bernard, this collection, this art exhibit, Putting Judaism Back in the Picture Toward Healing the Christian-Jewish Divide, tell our listeners about that. Sorry, I've got
a group of artists who have
go ahead.
Joined the exhibit, and they're producing artworks. That I just described, like Rod Borghese's, where he repainted several paintings so that you put them side by side and you can see the original version and then the one that restores Judaism, and you can make up your own mind, and it punctuates that that many of the paintings, if not most of them, have falsified biblical history. Others are presenting other aspects of integrating Judaism and Christianity. The goal of this exhibit and what the artists are contributing to in doing this is to tell the two sides of the Jesus story. The Renaissance art left out an important part of Jesus' heritage and identity. And there's two sides of the story. There's Jesus, the dedicated Jew, and there's Jesus, whose life and teachings inspired a new religion. So it's not either or, and it's not criticizing one or the other. It's trying to restore the common ground.
Right, and even the idea of Jesus starting a new religion, was that God's intent, or was God's intent to now bring the message of one true God to the whole world, but without Gentiles having to become Jews? And obviously Jesus said he didn't come to abolish the law of the prophets. But to
and that Jews could also embrace Jesus without necessarily feeling that they have to accept him as the Messiah, that they could still recognize him as a dedicated Jew, and we could leave the rest of the argument for further further discussion. I'll give you just one other example of one of the artworks and the exhibit by Beth Grossman, an artist in San Francisco, and she has a whole series of the Hands of Mary, and these are sculptures. And what she has is a collection of, and she did this while on a scholarly trip to Italy. She has common objects that she says a Jewish mother would be using in the kitchen, for example. And she took the Hands of Mary from various famous Renaissance paintings and put them, those very hands, on these objects. And they're magnificent. They're beautiful pieces of sculpture. And that is another example of integrating the two themes. I mean, here is the Hands of Mary, and here is the representation of a Jewish mother.
Yeah, and you know, the fact is, even when we change names, I don't mean change them in a new way, but get them back to what they were. When a Jewish person hears Miriam, they think of the sister of Moses, not the mother of Yeshua, but Mary.
Right.
Her name was Miriam. So, of course, we've emphasized these points for many years. It's been a delight to join in with you on your journey. And, of course, we'll keep pushing for the full jump of faith on your end. But appreciate appreciate very much what you're doing, and looking forward one of these days in New York to meeting you face to face. Thanks so much, sir, for joining us.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right. That was Bernard Starr. Again, the book Jesus, Jews, and Anti-Semitism in Art, How Renaissance Art Erased Jesus' Jewish Identity, How Today's Artists Restoring It. Go to Amazon, download it for just $2.99.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Blessed to have this opportunity to be on the air with you. First hour, we focused on the theme of justice and took calls relating to the grand jury's decision not to indict the officer involved in the death of Eric Garner in New York City. That, of course, has produced much more shock than the verdict with the killing of my namesake, Michael Brown, in Ferguson, Missouri, because of videotape that people could watch as this ensued. We spoke about that in the first hour, just finished speaking with Dr. Bernard Starr about his work in pointing out anti-Semitism in Christian art, taking the Jewishness out of Jesus and the New Testament in Christian art, and often demonizing the Jews at the same time in art, and how that's being addressed today. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to open up the phones now, the last 20 minutes of the broadcast. Any Jewish-related question you have, any Hebrew-related question, any Israel-related question, anything about Judaism or Jewish tradition, translation issues having to do with Old Testament or Hebrew, messianic prophecy issues, Jewish objections to Jesus, the whole wide range will be taking your calls. Before I go to the phones, I want to read to you from the Tree of Life version of the Bible. Remember, we have reduced the price, the lowest price we've offered this yet on the broadcast. We have reduced the price, and we're paying the postage as well. And we have the Bibles in stock. We can ship them to you if you want to give them out as Christmas presents, a great Thoroughly Jewish Thursday Christmas present. The Tree of Life version of the Bible, first ever joint translation, Messianic Jewish scholars, Christian scholars working together to put this out. But I'll read from James 1:1 in the ESV, one of the best modern versions. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes in the dispersion, greetings. All right, that's James 1:1. Now I'll read it to you in the Tree of Life version. Jacob, as it is in the Greek, a slave of God and of the Lord Yeshua, the Messiah, to the 12 tribes in the diaspora, shalom. That sounds a little different, and it reminds you right from the start that James was actually Jacob and that he was writing to Jewish believers scattered around the world, hence in the diaspora. Let's read James chapter 2, verse 2 in the ESV. For if a man wearing a gold ring and fine clothing comes into your assembly, and a poor man in shabby clothing also comes in. It goes on from there. Now I'll read it in the Tree of Life version, which translates the Greek word synagoges as it should be translated. For if a man with a gold ring and fine clothes comes into your synagogue. Uh-huh. That's what it says in the Greek. One more verse for you, and we'll go to chapter 5. This is just changing the names back to what the Greek would be, or back to what the Hebrew would be, and say Yeshua's name or Miriam's name, rather than Jesus and Mary. Now, by the way, it's perfectly fine to say Jesus and Mary, and to say that's how it's come from Hebrew into Greek, into Latin, eventually into English. That's fine. We are speaking English. So I use Jesus all the time. But to remind us that Jesus is Yeshua, to remind us that Mary is Miriam, it's important to have that in front of us. So the fifth chapter, well-known verse, that's why I always say James, Jacob, or Jacob, James, because I can't do it universally. In other words, not everyone will know what I'm talking about if I say Jacob, but I'm constantly trying to remind people that this is actually the letter of Jacob. So, Jacob, chapter 5, verse 14, in the ESV, is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church. Let them pray over him. Now we read it from the Tree of Life version. Is any among you sick? Let him call for the elders of Messiah's community. That's how they translate ecclesia. They don't just translate it as congregation. They certainly don't translate it as church. And is that the building or is that the people? And isn't that Christian? They translate it ecclesia as Messiah's community. Hence, this new messianic community of Jews and Gentiles together in Jesus, in Yeshua. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Fort Mill, South Carolina. John, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, good afternoon. Yeah, I had two quick questions. I'm kind of a new Christian, but was Jesus Christ, was he a Jew ethnically, or was his mother a Jew? And also, if Jesus was a Jew, why don't Christians follow Judaism?
Ah, great question. Yes, of course, he was a Jew. He was born King of the Jews. He died King of the Jews. He's referred to in the book of Revelation as the Lion of the tribe of Judah and is the root and offspring of Jesse. So he's a descendant of David, and he is the son of God as well as the son of David. So yes, he is a Jew, okay, in terms of his humanity. The reason we don't follow Judaism is because Judaism is a religion that has developed over the centuries. That Judaism is a religion that has changed in many ways, developed in many ways since the time of Jesus, and those who are practicing traditional Judaism have rejected Jesus as the Messiah. However, the church in many ways has cut itself off from its Jewish roots to the point that people think, well, Jesus was a Christian and not a Jew. He was a reverend or not a rabbi. Almost come to these strange ideas. What we need to do is realize that through Jesus, relationship with God has come to the whole world, and that Gentiles don't have to become Jews in order to be followers of Jesus. Gentiles don't need to become Jews or practice Judaism. However, they should recognize that they relate directly back to Israel, that they have been made part of the same family. Jewish followers of Jesus and Gentile followers of Jesus are part of the same family, and the roots of the faith are Israel, Jewish roots. So I say when we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus and his death at the time of Easter, let's incorporate that as part of Passover, as he did. Let's not reject those who say that Saturday is Sabbath and that that's set aside as Sabbath. Let's not say that they're backsliding or going into the law. Let's recognize that that's something very valid. So the truth is somewhere in between the two extremes, one of practicing Judaism and the other of practicing Christianity without Jewish roots. There should be a practice of our faith in Jesus that recognizes Jewish roots as well.
Right. Yeah, I just thought of one more question. Now, was Jesus, and was he an observant Jew religiously? When he was
Yes, he was observant in terms of he kept all of the Torah. He was not a lawbreaker. If he had been a lawbreaker, he would have rightly been rejected as the Messiah. He kept some Jewish traditions. For example, he went to synagogue. That was an innovation of the Pharisees. That was not part of the written Bible, of the written law. So he kept some traditions, but other traditions, he differed with the Pharisees, as we know in numerous accounts in the New Testament, most particularly Matthew 23. But in terms of observing Torah, we have some instances where someone just wanted to touch the hem of his garment to be healed. In other words, just the furthest, most extremity. And actually, the Greek word for hem should probably be translated fringe, that as a traditional or as a biblical Jew, according to Numbers 15, there would be ritual fringes on his garment. And he lived and dressed and looked like a Torah observant Jew who followed many of the traditions of his people, but those traditions that he felt were counterproductive or got in the way of the word of God, he rejected. John, thank you for the questions. Much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Todd in Seagrove, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. My question is about Hebrew customs. Near the end of chapter 16 of 2 Chronicles, you know, it talks about the death and burial of King Asa, and it's mentioned that there's a great burning made for him. What is that great burning?
All right, let's get the verse first. I don't think I've ever been asked that question on the air before. So 2 Chronicles 16, by the way, let me just give a little background, just give a little bit of a sermon here first, okay? His name, it's probably short for Asayah or Asael, which would be Yahweh or God healed or is the healer. In his early reign in 2 Chronicles 14, he put his trust in God. He was hopelessly outnumbered by the enemy. He put his trust in God and God delivered him. So he passes an edict that everyone must seek the Lord, which would mean turn away from idolatry and follow the Lord. And he lays that out in chapter 15 and says that anyone who doesn't do that will be put to death. And then in chapter 16, he's faced with another crisis later in life where there's an overwhelming enemy. And rather than putting his trust in God, he now hires out an enemy king. He takes the treasures of the temple, hires out an enemy king to fight against his other enemies. So it's complete compromise, leaning on the arms of the flesh. He rejects a prophetic word calling him to repent. And then he gets smitten with a severe disease in his feet. And even though the disease was severe, rather than trusting God for healing and repenting, he put his trust in what I believe were pagan physicians based on the Hebrew wording. So he's a great example of what to do right and what not to do wrong. What about the burning? I'll answer that on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to 30 Jewish Thursday on our last segment of the day. So, Todd, to finish your question about 2 Chronicles 16:14. According to the IVP Bible Background Commentary in the Old Testament, a great source for information like this, the funeral rites for Asa are quite elaborate, include the burning of spices in his honor as well as a general lamentation and interment in his family tomb. The fire does not imply cremation of the body or an attempt to mask the odors associated with the diseased body, but was rather an expensive display of the king's wealth. The practice is well known among Assyrian kings, where it was used as an apotropaic ritual that would have more of a magical cleansing effect. There's no evidence of that in ancient Israel in terms of this, but rather a display of wealth and the burning of expensive perfumes and things like that. But thank you, sir, for an interesting question. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Dennis in Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome to the Line of Fire. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
My question is, do you draw a distinction between supporting the secular government of Israel versus a real Torah-believing Jews versus Jews that have converted to Christianity? My point being is I think we are supporting the secular government of Israel given the treatment of the Palestinian people.
Yeah, I'll respond to that. Our first solidarity should always be to believers. And I wouldn't speak of Jews converting to Christianity. I speak of Jews coming to faith in Jesus as the Messiah. But that's always our first solidarity. The same with the world, that if we can help God's people first, we always do that, as we're exhorted to in several passages. But I also believe that we recognize that God has restored the Jewish people to the land. He's the one who scattered. He's the only one who could regather. And we recognize that. We recognize also that there is an attempt by the enemy to wipe out the state of Israel. Yes, the non-believing, in terms of Jesus-believing, state of Israel. Satan wants to wipe them out. There will be end-time war against Jerusalem, according to passages like Zechariah 12 and Zechariah 14. And therefore, we recognize that God has restored. We recognize that Satan wants to destroy. We also recognize the extreme media bias that's often against Israel. Right now, Israel being surrounded by hostile nations that would like to destroy them. And because of that, also because of historic anti-Semitism in the church that has driven many Jews away from Jesus, this is a way for us to overcome that history. It's a way for us to show solidarity with the lost sheep of the house of Israel, show compassion, and also to stand with God who has restored. And on a purely secular level, Israel is our best ally in the Middle East. Israel is the nation where Christians have complete liberty to practice their faith and are not being killed and persecuted. So in many, many ways, and for many reasons, we should stand with Israel, including the secular nation. That being said, when we differ, we differ. When we feel Israel is not doing the right thing, we address it as true friends, not as enemies. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Vic, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
What you do. My question is regarding the word, the Hebrew word for fear, that is used in Genesis 22 when God tells Abraham that you have, don't kill your son. I know that you fear God.
Yep.
And the word that's used there, I understand, is different from the word that's used, for example, in Proverbs. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. The word there, I believe, is a different Hebrew word. Could you shed some light on the usages of the word, the Hebrew words for fear, which we in English just say fear in all places, but could you shed some light on, helping me understand what it means to fear God?
Yeah, let me first address the question as to whether there is a different word being used. And the answer is no. It's the same Hebrew root, Yud Resh Aleph. So it means to fear in a reverential way, and it's the identical word that's used in, as just as I'm looking at the Hebrew text in front of me, in Proverbs chapter 1, and it says that the fear of the Lord, it's the identical Hebrew root that's used there in Proverbs 1:7. So whoever told you that was misinformed, and the word can be used for fear in the sense of I'm fearful for my life, or it can be used in fear in terms of reverential fear. Exodus 20, Moses says to the people, don't fear. God has come to put his fear before you so that you won't sin. And it uses the same word, just as I did in English, fear and fear. It doesn't mean fear in terms of servile fear for believers. It doesn't mean fear like you'd have for an alcoholic father who may come in and beat you up for no reason one night. It doesn't mean fear like someone having a panic attack and they think, oh no, the building's going to collapse and I'm going to die. It doesn't mean terror, but it does mean a reverential fear, because our God is a consuming fire. The end of Hebrews 12 says, let us then serve God acceptably with reverence and godly awe, for our God is a consuming fire. So what it means is we recognize him for who he is. We recognize him as the holy God who has all power in the universe and can destroy the whole universe and us in a split second. Jesus says it in Matthew 10. And by the way, the same word phobia is used for good and bad fear in the New Testament. So it's all a matter of what kind of fear. There is no fear in love. That's the bad fear, the fear of punishment, servile fear. Oh, no, he's out to get me. A big, bad God is going to step on me like a little bug just because I looked at him the wrong way. No, we right. don't have that fear, but we recognize who he is. Matthew 10, don't fear those. This is Jesus talking to his disciples, who can kill the body, but who can't kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. So we recognize who he is. We recognize his standards, his laws, his commandments are good and righteous. And now look at it like a spotlight shining down on someone. When you walk in the light, the fear of the Lord, walking in the fear of the Lord becomes a strong tower, becomes a refuge, becomes a place of safety. So to walk in the fear of the Lord, I recognize who he is. I walk in obedience to that in reverent love and respect. And as I do, it brings blessing and favor. Go through the book of Proverbs and underline every time it says the fear of the Lord, you'll find it to be a very eye-opening study. Friends, we're out of time, but I do have one more minute to tell you that I've been reading from the Tree of Life version of the Bible in some quotes a few minutes back from the New Testament, from the book of Jacob, better known as James, but should be known as Jacob. You can get your copy. They're normally $30 plus postage for the hardcover, the Old and New Testament together, which just came out earlier this year. But this week, it's $20 plus we're paying the postage. Order as many as you want. We will get them to you in time for holiday gifts in the States if you want to give them out. A great Thoroughly Jewish Thursday Christmas gift. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978 to order. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978 to order, or at the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. When you're there, check out the video and then go ahead and order. My bottom line today, yes, we need to recover the Jewishness of Jesus for our faith to be complete and to be fully grounded in the truth of the word.